What's up, guys? We are back with another episode of Pound for Pound. I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Heavy Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
A Shot of Lime production.
And guys, what an amazing weekend. UFC 300 took place this weekend down there in Las Vegas, Nevada at the T-Mobile Arena. And what a card. What an amazing night of fights. Whew. Guys, as you can tell, obviously, I'm speaking with a heavy heart because what we never want to happen, what we fear the most in the sport happened this weekend. Henry, I'm gonna let you start because I'm not in the best mood in the best place. So I'm gonna let you start and I'm gonna feed off of you, bro.
I get it, Kamar. Obviously, I know you guys are super close, man. You know, I was there when, you know, hearing Justin Gaethje call you to come out and help him. You know, just the relationship you guys do have. You know, it's like seeing your brother. Literally, it's like seeing your brother get knocked out. You know, and it was hard, man, because I almost feel looking at the whole scenario as a whole, like how was Friday? I mean, was Friday in good spirits? Did he cut the weight right, Kamaru? Was the game plan? Did he follow the game plan according to what you guys had planned? I mean, was the jaw to maybe potentially use a little bit of the wrestling? I mean, where was it that Gaethje's head was at? Was he good physically? And did he make those adjustments during the fight? And that's a question for you, Kamaru. You know, I'm going back to Friday, him cutting the weight. I'm going back to him, following the game plan on Saturday night.
Yeah, that's a very, very fair question because all those things, as we know, can play a part in the result on Saturday night, as we've grown accustomed to fighting. But that's not, you know, it's not something that we dwell on, because Justin did what he needed to do. He's a constant professional. He dieted right. He dropped the weight accordingly, and he lost the weight. You know, of course, you know, you have weight cuts that are some that are difficult, some that are less difficult, but it's a weight cut's a weight cut. It's always challenging. And he got there. He got on the scale. He was good. And he started to rehydrate and everything was good. He was clicking. He had a great camp. I wouldn't say that, especially not someone like Justin. He's never going to make an excuse that, oh, this is why this happened or this happened. It doesn't matter. Justin is a professional. He came to he prepared to fight. He came to fight. But to answer your question, I think the place where things kind of might have went sideways is making the necessary adjustments in the fight. I think Justin is such a freaking good guy, which is why he's your favorite fighter's favorite fighter. Is he loves to entertain so much. To where it's okay, you paid to see this type of fight. I'm going to give you that type of fight. He's that type of guy. And to where I thought he could have made some adjustments, where he is a wrestler. This fight's completely different had Justin changed levels and took Max down once or twice. And he can do it. He can 100% do it. Had he changed levels and took him down once, this fight gives us a better, it gives us a different potential outcome in the fight. So I think maybe just the adjustments in fight, but Henry, we can't shy away from the fact that this man, you know, he took that knee to the nose, the kick to the nose at the end of the first round, just seconds left, or if not zero time left, took that kick to the nose, which plays a huge part in potentially moving on in the fight, because now you can't breathe the way you want to breathe in that fight. And on top of that, we have to see the two eye pokes. I mean, they were clear cut, legit eye pokes. And it wasn't that Max was doing it maliciously or on purpose. They happen. And these are the type of things that can alter the outcome of a fight.
Right. So I think you're 100% right on it. I mean, I think And people don't know this, but if Justin was to get just one takedown and be able to hold him and really ground and pound him and in that factor and allow, you know, then he would have started making a guy like Max Holloway actually think. But then watching this fight as a whole, I felt like Justin could have done a better job of covering distance. He could have done a better job of double faking and then looking for that kick. He could have done a better job of double faking and then kind of catching his combination because he was a little too further out. And you got to give credit where it's due. And I felt like Max Holloway was doing a very good job of really creating that distance where it was making Justin a little bit of uncomfortable because he wasn't necessarily staying in the pocket. When Justin would come, Max Holloway was pretty much just leaving. And I think there was a couple fakes that could have allowed a guy like Gaethje to get in there a little bit closer and pretty much go for broke. I mean, Justin did a good job of kicking that leg. I'm getting a bunch of shit, Kamaru, because people are saying, how did Justin win that? Are we watching the same fight? Dude, that round two, those leg kicks that Justin was hitting, like, dude, those you guys, for all you casuals and even you fighters, and I think the fighters get it, all those calf kicks, guys, that's like taking a right hand. But it was impressive, and the simple fact that a guy like Max Holloway could be able to take those leg kicks and continue to keep walking forward. I mean, at the end of the fight, Kamaru, I mean, was that the best judgment for a guy like Justin Gaethje to do? You go back to being entertaining. Being entertaining, was that the best thing? Was that the best decision that I could, that a guy like Justin Gaethje could actually do to be able to stand in the center with a guy that pretty much was getting the better of him on the feet and to eventually knock him out? I mean, could this be a career changing moment for a guy like Justin Gaethje?
No. I mean, his career changed. No. I mean, I think Justin Gaethje has solidified himself and where he's...
No. I'm talking about physically.
But physically? Nah, I don't think so. I definitely do think we take some time and we bounce back. I mean, Justin's been here before. You know, Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier. He took the time. He bounced back. Did the necessary things that he needed to do to get back. So I don't think so. I think it's based on him and how he wants to continue his career. But no, I don't think it alters anything. But to answer your question, as far as at the end of the fight, I take nothing away. You can't. That's Justin Gaethje. That's a Justin Gaethje move. That's what the BMF does. That's that right there. That end of that fight is exactly what we signed up for. That is exactly what that title is about. Am I right or am I wrong? That's exactly what that title is about. We are BMFs. Let's meet in the center and let's go. And who would have ever bet that Justin Gaethje loses that type of fight? In the center, we're swinging. Who bets that Justin Gaethje loses? No one. I certainly didn't. Of course, you know, towards the end, Max, obviously his confidence grew because just like Justin, in the way that he can build a fight now, that is one of Max Holloway's specialty. He's building a fight, getting into the fight, and by the end of the fight, solidifying himself for whether he's the victor or the loser of the fight. And Max definitely did that. He built the confidence over time, especially in that fifth round. So once the end of that fight came, he grew the confidence. He grew the cojones to say, meet me in the center, Mr. BMF, and let's get this done. And that right there is exactly what that title is about. And Justin was not wrong. Justin is a game opponent. Justin is always, there's a reason why he is the highlight. And you know, Justin took a chance. I just think he, as far as he was beat on position in that, once we're exchanging, he was beat on position. He was caught up tall, just like Trevor would tell us all the time. Don't be up tall. He was caught up tall while Holloway was underneath, body shot, right hook over the top. Justin was caught standing up tall, and that's why that hook landed. So, you know, I take nothing away from Max Holloway. Max is, this one, it's a tough one because I love Max as a fan, as, you know, as a guy, just a human being. He's an amazing guy, but it definitely hurt because watching my brother go down like that, it stung big time. And now I understand the position that I put them in 2 years ago in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I think if anybody understands that position of being where he's at right now, Kamaru, you know, it's you've gone through that, you know, that knockout, man. Like, I always felt, and I've talked to Ali, like, you know, it's hard for you to tell a fighter, like, when your fight got announced with Leon, I'm just, like, so quick, I'm like, fuck, I'm like, Ali, I don't like it, man. I don't like him coming back that early, bro. But obviously, I know you're a competitor. I know that the Nigerian Nightmare is a BMF. But now if you're in Justin Gaethje's shoes, do you tell him, hey, little brother, don't do as I did. You know, do as I say, man. Allow your brain to heal up. Give yourself a little bit more time. And then eventually catch that fight once again.
Yeah, I think, but Justin's a very, very intelligent guy. He's very, very tough and smart guy. So I think he's going to take the necessary steps. He's going to take the time. And he doesn't have to. Justin is one of those special guys that is always going to have options. And so he could take the time to, he doesn't need to rush back to a fight. He takes the time. He sits.
No, I know, but you giving him advice, Kamal. I want to hear more of that. I want to hear what Justin...
It's very difficult to tell a guy, especially as us being competitors, it's very difficult for a man to tell another man, hey, this is what you're going to do. This is what you should do. Especially when he's the competitor. You know, the competitor in us is like, I got to get this stain off me as soon as possible. So, but Justin is very smart. He listens to us, and I think he's going to listen when my advice would be to take some time. Yeah. You have options.
How much time tomorrow?
As much time as he wants. Justin, the type of guy that could sit for a year and people would still lose their minds as soon as he's announced to fight. So it doesn't matter how long he wants to take his time. I mean, he's rightfully so. Justin's not hurting for anything. You know, of course, maybe his heart's a little hurt right now, but Justin's not hurting for anything. He's solid. He has a solid foundation. He has a solid structure in his family and his support system. He knows I'm the type. He can call me anytime. I'm like, all right, let's go. Where are we going? What are we doing? You know, so I think he just needs to take time, at least 6 months. 6 months. Just relax. Enjoy it a little bit because he's still in rare form, man. That guy can still go with anyone. So enjoy it a little bit. Heal up. That's the biggest is heal up. Let that brain heal. Because when you go out like that, it's like a reboot. It reboots the body. And I think the body needs at least about 6 months to just fully recover and back up to 100% running capacity. So he takes his time and he comes back when he wants.
Okay, that's 6 months of rest and then start training? Or that's 6 months he's able to fight again?
No, he has to rest. He has to train. You can't just, especially after, and I learned this the hard way, especially after a knockout like that, you don't listen to people that the casuals are like, oh, he should just sit at home for 6 months and do nothing. No, you have to work. You still have to work out. You still have to get the blood flowing and blood pumping through your body. That's part of the recovery process. Of course, you're not sparring and doing rigorous things like getting hit in the head and things like that, but he's definitely working out still. But I would say no fight on the horizon for at least 6 to 8 months. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that being said, man, I guess now it's putting Max Holloway, Kamaru, in a position where, you know, he could potentially fight at 155 pounds and ask to fight Islam Makhachev. He could almost skip the line. Obviously, Makhachev is fighting a guy like he is fighting Poirier in June. But after that fight, Max Holloway says, hey, I want to fight. You know, I'm the real BMF. I fought 155 pounds. I got rid of the guy that gets rid of people. You got 145 pounds. That fight with Ilya Topuria. And Ilya Topuria, supposedly according to Ilya, he is not impressed. I tell you what, Kamaru, if a guy like Max Holloway, if a guy like Ilya Topuria cannot put out a guy like Max Holloway with that endurance and that gas tick that he has, and now that he's knocking people out senseless, Ilya Topuria could be in trouble. Could a guy like Ilya Topuria bring in that wrestling? And finally, not least, he has that fight with Conor McGregor. You got to remember, guys, Conor McGregor has a win over Max Holloway. You know, you don't think Max Holloway's on a hit list and say, hey, I want Dustin Poirier. You know, we have history. He never really brought up Islam. It's almost like he wants Volkanovski. He wants to go after those people who have beaten him. And I think for that reason, man, I respect Holloway even more so now. I mean, the guy took the most dangerous fight in the UFC against the most violent guy in the UFC, in the history of the UFC. And what he was able to do right now, Kamaru, he has said whether he wants to challenge anybody for the BMF, whether he wants to go up to 155 pounds, whether he wants to go and fight Ilia Topuria in Spain at 145 pounds. And guess what? That big money fight with Conor McGregor.
Ooh, Holloway said this?
Yes, this is Holloway. Yeah. Holloway, he said all this. And think about it. It all makes sense, Kamaru. He's in a position, Kamaru, like nobody else in the UFC, to be able to make a whole lot of money and to really avenge all the losses that he's ever been given.
Yeah. It's a wonderful position to be in because now you have unlimited options, but now you have to be sensible about what direction you want to take. Are you trying to make money, or are you trying to become champion? Or which direction are we going here? For Max, I would say 100. Of course, I liked him the callouts, but I think 145 at this point should kind of be on the back burner. He took the proper time to grow into 155 pounds. Like, he's not small. He's big. He's taller than Justin, or if not the same height as Justin. He filled out well. He still kept his speed. And definitely kept the cardio. So I definitely don't think 145 pounds is the right move here as far as cutting that extra weight and really killing yourself to get down there. I don't like that for Max. I think Max stays at 155 pounds. Now, as far as beating a guy like Islam Makhachev, like that's tough because Islam is going to wrestle. So that tip, that 100% changes the course of a fight. So I think there's fun fights at 155 pounds. The Conor McGregor fight, that definitely is doable because now you sit and wait. Conor was very, very jealous when the BMF title was announced and was given out to Jorge Masvidal, because remember, there was something that was said there about them potentially fighting and making that fight, but that never came to fruition. But now, a rematch versus a guy like Max Holloway that's around the same weight as you, both featherweights moving up to lightweights, I think it makes sense. I think you potentially sit there and wait for Conor McGregor, or you try to fight Islam. But if I'm Max Holloway, I continue to just cash in here. I continue to cash in. I take the biggest name available, and I go and cash in. Because right now, whether you're fighting for a UFC title or not, you are a cash-generating king, so that is where I would stay with Max Holloway. Let's skip to 45.
I love it, Kamaru. You're a businessman. I'm going to start calling you Usman White. So, A, you're going Conor McGregor. B, you're probably going to challenge the winner of Islam Makhachev and Dustin Poirier. And obviously, C, go down to 145 pounds. I like it. I mean, obviously, it's up to him. It's the way he wants to cut it, slice it, and dice it. But guess what, Kamaru? The BMF title is now going to be fun. Because obviously, you know, Justin had it. It's fun. But now there's so many matchups, too, with a guy like Max Holloway. Let's say he does fight at 145 pounds. If I'm Ilia Topuria, you know what I'm saying, Kamaru? I'm saying, Ilia Topuria, if I'm Ilia Topuria, I'm telling this to Max. I'm like, Max Holloway, put that BMF title on the line. Like, I remember when George fought you, the title was never there, but the title has to pretty much move. Like, it, whether a champion has it, but I think right now, because of that title, like, it just has to move, and the winner should be able to get it. And guess what, man? If Ilya does fight Max Holloway at 145 pounds, I mean, guys, I mean, belt versus belt, why not, man? Like, I felt like when you beat George Masvidal in the fashion that you did it, Kamaru, especially that second time, like, hey, give him the belt. You wouldn't want that. You wouldn't mind holding up that strap.
No, but King Maru. Yeah, 100%. But there's a difference in That BMF, it's a clear consensus that you don't just because you beat the guy who has the BMF doesn't make you a BMF. A BMF is taking the chances that we've taken throughout the courses of our career. Me taking on a guy like Jorge Masvidal on 6 days notice, halfway across the world, when I didn't train for a striker like him, that's what a BMF does. And so it's a clear consensus of what the number one requirement is to fight for that BMF title. And it's not necessarily just because you beat the guy who was a BMF or who had the BMF title. So no, I don't think Ilia Topuria is at that level yet to where he's fighting for a BMF title. Of course, he is a savage. And of course, right now he is the current undisputed featherweight champion of the world. And that's where he's fighting for. I think he needs a little bit more chances, a little bit more dances at the rodeo to be considered for that BMF. Right now, Max Holloway is the BMF in the UFC, and that's where it is. But, you know, if that fight happens, it happens. I definitely think Max shouldn't be killing himself to cut down to 145 pounds. He has a good life. I love seeing these growth in people. With Max Holloway, I love seeing the way that he is. I love seeing his spirit now. You know, he's got his wife. His son's happy, and I see him at the fight week, and he's just so relaxed, and he's having fun with this, and that's what it's all about, that freedom right there. So right now, you don't need to be killing yourself, putting extra pressure, extra stress on yourself to cut down 145 pounds to fight a guy like Ilia Topuria, who is very, very dangerous. Stay at 155. You still get bread. You got the title. You got the BMF title, so that's a cash cow right now for him.
Woo, that's awesome, bro. And I tell you what, man, there could be, you know, obviously you were in Black Panther, you know, you were in some, you know, doing movies and whatnot. Like Holloway could go that route, man.
Max has done movies.
Yeah, he Max has done that's movies. Right.
You know, Max was Den of Thieves.
Yeah, Hawaii 5-0,
Den of Thieves. He's been in movies, man.
Shit, I'm talking about features. I'm talking about being like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm talking about stardom. Anyways, the sky is the limit for Max Bless Holloway. Moving on to the main event, Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill. Come on, Kamaru, let me have it, bro, because I'm about to give you my two cents on that whole fight.
It was a great fight. Very, very, very good fight. But I think this is part of the reason I chose Alex Pereira was the fact of one, the injury that Jamahal Hill sustained and was coming back from, and two, which was the most important, is not recognizing your path to your path of least resistance to victory here. Not recognizing that. I think his whole goal and his whole mindset was, I'm going to go knock this guy out. I'm going to go knock this guy out. I'm going to go knock this guy out. When that's the hardest way to win the fight. That's the hardest way to beat a world champion kickboxer, is to stand and kickbox with the guy when you can take him down and utilize that ground and pound. So for that simple fact alone, which is the reason I chose Alex Pereira, it's not that Jamahal Hill was incapable. Jamahal was looking good. You know, he was moving well, but Alex Pereira just came up. He said, left hook city. And sheesh, that left foot got some heat on it.
Well, let me tell you something about this fight, Kamaru. First of all, and this is the reason why Pereira did the whole thing. Is that like an Israel thing or something that Israel did, like showing the pizza? I don't get the inside joke on that. Can you help me out there?
well, obviously you guys know that, what's his name? Cobb Baby or whatever his name is, the guy that does the videos, and it's basically saying there it is, just like that. It's that easy. You can just like that, you know. And I think it was because he felt disrespected with what Jamahal Hill was saying towards the press conference, because it was cordial, they were friendly, everything was good. And then at the press conference, rightfully so, as you should, Jamahal Hill started to sell the fight. And Jamahal Hill was starting to be firm and more assertive with what he felt that his game plan was going to be, how he was going to win this fight. And of course, holding up the chain with the statue figure of Alex what they say is Alex Pereira and all these things. I think he kind of Alex internalized, and so he was gung-ho on sleeping Jamal Hill, and once he did it, he was like, voila, there you go.
Golly, those sound effects, Kamaru. Well, that being said, there's one thing that really confused me with a guy like Jamal Hill, because it's almost like he was hot and then he was cold and then he was cold and he was hot. I mean, to the point where, hey, he asked him to sign his sweater. You know, he would touch his sense respect, and then he would go into the press conference. You know, with the whole stone thing with the guy like Pereira, to him, just almost to the point where he's bringing that gimmick inside the Octagon, and that's where you have to be careful. We know where Patton does his little thing, you know, where he goes, "Nah!" and he does that. And then and it's almost like Jamal Hill was like waiting for it, you know, grabbed the arrow, snapped it on his thing. Like, who cares, man? Like, just be focused. Like, you're about to fight, man. Like, you don't have, you no longer have to sell the fight. And I think sometimes you have to really understand, was his head ultimately there? Was he ready? Was he prepared? Was it too much entertainment? Was it too much bringing that persona to eventually the fight starts? Patton starts to catch him with those leg kicks. And then once he started to find his range with those leg kicks, I'm like, oh, once he started to find, especially because Jamal Hill's a southpaw, and he said in an interview, he was like, it was a lot more difficult fighting a southpaw, but as soon as I started touching that leg, I knew that it was just a matter of time before I was able to really, you know, catch my distance, get a little closer, press him to eventually fake, boom. And that left hook pretty much caught him, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, you're right. The tough part now about this sport is understanding the fine line between entertainment and actually being focused in the fight. Because rightfully so, listen. Yes, yeah, sign my sweater. Yes, of course. Because Jamal Hill has respect for Alex Pereira. He does. He showed it all throughout the week. But then they came the opportunity to make the big, which I hope Jamal Hill's got pay-per-view points for that fight. Because if he didn't, then all of this was pointless. It's. I think it came to the time where it's the last big push for pay-per-view sales, which was the press conference. You go to the press conference, and you got to sell the fight. You got to let the people know why they should buy this fight because of what I am potentially going to do on Saturday night. And I think that's what Jamal Hill did. That I had no problem with. I had no problem with that. He dialed it up. He said, this is what I'm going to do. He was assertive with that. I have absolutely zero problems with that. Now, on Saturday night, fight's coming. Your opponent's coming. Why am I even worried about my opponent and him doing this thing? You know, and shooting the arrow at the cage. It doesn't matter. But for Jamal Hill, had it worked and Jamal Hill went out there and slept him, this would make for a good meme. This would be crazy all over the internet right now. This meme would be all over the place. So it's kind of one of those gambles that you gamble with. You could potentially lose focus of the fight. Or if you go out there and you're victorious, this is amazing. I'm sure there'd be edits all over the world right now of you catching the arrow, breaking it, and then knocking the guy out. So, you know, it was something that he took a gamble on, and this time it just didn't work out. But it's a tough one right now, Henry, to find that line between entertainment, wanting to entertain fans, and actually being focused on the mission at hand.
Yeah, but you know what, Kamaru, that's where you cut it off, dude. That's where you cut it off. You got to cut it off like, you know, the king of cringe, the gimmick. Right after Wayne's, I'm doing that crazy freaking stare down. You got slobber coming out. I got literally slobber, dude. You know, pulling those little packets, that kind of build foam. After the face-off, guys, the gimmick is done. Like, I am chilled. I am just smart. You know, calm, cool, collected, as they would say. And then just get ready to freaking pretty much bang. And my eyes are on you the whole damn time. Every time I'm fighting, I'm zeroed in on you. I don't care what is it that you're going to end up doing. But that being said, I don't feel like that was a Jamal Hill that fought Glover Teixeira that became the light heavyweight champion of the world, because that the Jamal Hill with straight punches that was on it, I felt I saw like there was a little gut on Jamal Hill, and I don't know if you noticed that, but his body was a little bit different. But that being said, guys,
have you seen Jamal Hill before? Have you seen his fights before?
Have you paid
attention?
That Glover fight, I didn't see a little gut on him.
First of all, let's not say that. Let's not describe the man as that. That's just the lower abs, okay? And yes, he does carry the lower abs. He's always carried the lower abs. Look at all his previous fights. He's always carried the lower abs. I thought he was definitely a little bit more in shape for this fight. You know, he always carries the lower abs. So it's been there, but that has not stopped him before. Jamal Hill possesses something in these, and he knows if I touch you with one of these bad boys, you're going to sleep. And he tried, but I just think the emphasis was too much on fighting as opposed to winning. You know, had he switched his mentality about winning, then he would have been more focused on a strategy and just been okay with the path of least resistance to win this fight.
Yeah, and as you said too, Kamaru, the passive least resistance, and people are not using it against a guy like Pereira. You know, Pereira might as well, you know, he was given his black belt, never seen him really grapple in the cage. But what's next for a guy like him? Obviously, the fight that there's two fights for him. There's that fight against Ankulaev, which he wants to make it right, because in reality is Ankulaev's the toughest challenge at light heavyweight, because Ankulaev is he's just as big as Alex Pereira. But not just that, what he brings to the table that nobody's using against Pereira is wrestling. You know, him being Russian, him coming from that lineage of wrestling and striking and being well-rounded. I mean, will these guys really finally start to take the fight where it needs to be? Like, it's not everybody's got good hands, but and particularly a guy like Pereira, it's a trip. So could a guy like Ankulaev, you know, get the job done? Will he bring in that strategic game plan to make him fight his B side? Or where is it that Alex Pereira goes? Does he go against, does he fight at a third division against, you know, Tom Aspinall in Rio? I mean, this guy's already talking about fighting in 301. And I do believe that he wants to fight in it because he has said it. Will the UFC allow their champion, their star, the light heavyweight champ, go up and fight against the interim light heavyweight champion, Tom Aspinall? Because guess what, Kamaru, call me crazy, but I am not counting this dude out. Even if a guy like Tom Aspinall wants to stand with him, a guy that's 232 pounds going in there, he's probably going to be a lot heavier. If he does go to heavyweight, I feel like a guy like Tom Aspinall could actually be in trouble too.
100%, I think. No, it's absolutely right. If UFC wants him to fight Tom Aspinall in next month in Rio, 100%. There's nothing wrong with that. I completely agree with that, because at this point, Alex Pereira is a bigger star than Tom Aspinall. Of course, Tom Aspinall is good. Very, very good. I think that he's the champion, the interim champion at heavyweight. But I think Alex Pereira, if he's able and willing to fight next month, I think why not? Let him fight in Rio, in Brazil. But as far as moving up, I think everybody in that middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight division are in trouble when they fight a guy like Alex Pereira. If you don't take the path of least resistance and you let him actually fight in the way that he does have the biggest advantage, I think they're all in trouble. And so I definitely do give him a good chance with a guy like Tom Aspinall. But, you know, don't take nothing away from Tom. Tom is a savage as well. And he's a problem for anybody to deal with.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, there's a lot, man. There's a lot going on. I mean, there's a lot of options that a guy like Alex Pereira has. Obviously, we all saw Izzy's reaction. You know, there we have it. We have you, the Nigerian Nightmare, and we got Adesanya's reaction. I mean, he's a little speechless, said at least. But that being said, the dude is a problem. If you don't wrestle this dude, your probabilities of really beating him are going to go down. I mean, there's a reason why Israel Adesanya doesn't want to fight him at 85 nor 205. And you know what? I don't blame him, because if you're just going to strike with him, he's going to pick you apart. But it also lets you know how good Izzy is to be able to win rounds and actually hurt a guy like Alex Pineda. But right now, next to Max Holloway, the guy that has the opportunity to do a lot of things in the UFC, it is Alex Pineda. Whether he wants to go at heavyweight and fight Tom Aspinall, or whether he wants to fight Uncle Live at light heavyweight. And who knows, guys, potentially Israel Adesanya wins that belt against Strikers Du Plessis. Maybe they could run it back, belt versus belt, at 185 or at 205. Guys, so moving on to the co-main event, the Battle of China, Zhang Weili versus Yang Xiaonong. Did I pronounce that right, Kamaru?
Close enough. Definitely close enough.
Anyhow, this fight, Kamaru, was a battle of two country women. I mean, obviously, we saw the fight, man. You know, Xiaonong has a heart of a warrior. I felt like she was out cold when Weili had that rear naked choke. I almost wonder if they should count that as somewhat of a knockout. But either way, man, that fight was cold. Weili did her thing. Weili was able to mix it. She was able to use all her different twos to be able to get the victory.
No, definitely not a knockout, because she was in a submission hold. But she got up, and I think the ref gave her ample chances. I mean, because what the ref wanted was a big stumble that she didn't know where she was at. And for him to call the fight, because he was very watchful of her when she stood up, and you know she had a little bit of a stumble, but she seemed present enough to get to her corner, and the ref allowed it to continue because the time went out. She didn't tap, and he did do a final check, and she was still awake when he did the final check, and then towards the end it was just those extra 2 seconds, 2-3 seconds, and you know. That seemed like they might have completely put her out. But, you know, she's a warrior. I knew she was the striking advantage. I knew she was. She's blistering fast. Like, her quick twitch to get to the target is so fast. And as you saw, she dropped Weili a couple of times there. And And Weili just seemed to... basically did what a champion does do, is find the path of least resistance, which was the grappling. So she kept going to it. She kept changing levels, getting to the wrestling and getting her down, and ultimately head on to win the fight.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I think there's a lot that Weili's also in a great position. She's already defended her bout a few times now. So I think moving forward now, I think, as I said before, it's time for her to go up. And I think there's one advice that I would give to Weili and all these other fighters. Whatever it is that you actually do on the mic after your post-fight, that's the real post-fight interview. It's not what you tell MMA Junkie and everybody, or MMA fighting on the back at the press conference. No, whatever you do inside the octagon will lead you to that next position. Where is it that you want to be? So I'm surprised she didn't call out the winner of Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko. I do believe that she has the right to be able to go up to 125 pounds and finally become the second two-division champ in women's UFC history.
I think she did the best she could. I mean, she was overwhelmed by... She just got done from a very hard-fought victory. That wasn't easy by any means. It was not easy. It was hard. She dropped twice in that fight. And so I think she was just getting over that. And... I think it was just she was, after a hard-fought battle like that with another woman from the same country, this was a very, very big moment for both of these women, because it was a huge moment for the world. Two Chinese women fighting for the title, not just Chinese men, but Chinese women fighting for a title, first time in history. It was such a huge moment that I think it was so overwhelming, and she knew that it was going to be a tough fight for her. Imagine the nerves that she was dealing with as the first Chinese champion, and now do you lose your belt to another Chinese lady? So she's dealing with all these feelings, and so at the end of that fight, she couldn't help but just be grateful of the moment and be respectful of that moment. And then when she got in the back, she realized, you know what? Maybe I do want to move up and challenge for that belt to be champ. But, you know, incredible fight. And it just showed the heart of a champion to be able to withstand all of that and still get the victory. Shows that she is the true champion.
Yeah, of course, man. Well, now moving on to the Coco main event. Godly, every one of these cards could really be a pay-per-view headliner. We got Charles Oliveira versus Armen Sarukian. I'll tell you what, did I not call this Kamaru Usman? Did I not tell you he was going to have to make it boring? He was going to have to control up top. He was going to have to pretty much, because if you really look at the fight, yeah, he did catch some elbows, Armen up top and whatnot, but the majority of the time, he was just controlling time. Charles Oliveira is so dangerous, man. The fact that he was able to catch that that triangle at the end of round one, you know, it was 2-1. I didn't see this fight as a split decision. I felt like it was 2 and 3 were definitely Armin's, but his ability to be able to get out of that choke says a lot about this guy. Right now, the guy that's probably more problematic for a champion like Islam Makhachev, it has to be a guy like Armen Sarukian. You know why, Kamaru? Because he does have wrestling. You know why, Kamaru? Because he is a little shorter. And we saw in the past, too, that a guy like Islam had a little trouble with shorter guys. The shorter guys could get up a lot easier from the bottom. So that being said, Armen Sarukian, congratulations to him. And he is dangerous, man. He was able to get out of the submission. He showed kicks. He did that axe kick to be able to catch. You know, not that it was anything special or anything crazy, but he was able to get it. It showed his flexibility. Armen Sarukian is on his way to potentially fight the winner of Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, it was special. I wouldn't say it was boring. I think it was more of a, it was really a skills match, because it was like they were basically jockeying for position the whole fight. But we did know that in the area that Armen was going to have the big advantage was going to be in the grappling exchanges and getting Charles down on his back and potentially doing some ground and pound from the top position, which is what played out. And so just a smart guy. This is a guy that knows where he's going, knows what he needs to do in order to become champion. And he's definitely taking advantage of that. So, you know, Armen is, it's not too much to say about the fight. We knew exactly what was going to happen and we called it. He did definitely try to swing his sword, you know, but unfortunately just, you know, you were just outgunned and outmanned. So, I mean, that's pretty much it for that fight. That fight didn't really, you're right, Henry, it didn't have a lot of wow moments in it, but, you know, it is what it is.
Moving on to, you know, the phenom, Bo Nickel versus Brundage. I tell you what, man, Bo Nickel, he's exerting a lot of energy off those takedowns, and not just that, Dana White, talk to him a little bit. Hey, man, don't put so much pressure on yourself, Bo. You know, if Bo wants to be, if he wants to be great, he's going to continue to have to keep, you know. I got into UFC when I was 6-0. Like, this dude is being put into the UFC, and he's fighting maybe a tougher competition than you would in maybe like Legacy or Anyhow, that being said, Kamaru, Bo Nickel got the finish. He was able to use his top riding. He was overwhelmed Brundage. Brundage necessarily never really threw anything special to try to catch him. And Bo Nickel pretty much just ran away with it.
Yeah, he tried for a second. I think he but it was just, they weren't really well timed and well calculated. He was just swinging, like, you know, just doing weird and huge techniques. But I think it was, there was a moment there in maybe the second round, at the beginning of the second round, to where he was kind of throwing real shots with conviction. And you saw Bo Nickel kind of had to take a step back, like, oh, whoa, I don't want to get hit by one of those. But at the end of the day, Bo Nickel could out-wrestle Cody Brundage more than Cody Brundage could defend. And that's all that was. It wasn't really like he was necessarily putting him in crazy, dangerous submission holds or things like that. He just out-wrestled him. He kept wrestling, and it got to the point where Cody just was like, all right, I want out of this fight. And, you know, he pretty much was, you know, choked out of the fight. But it's tough to deal with. I don't think Bo Nickel should be I know when you get in and everybody start, it's such a weird thing when people are just all of a sudden start taking liking to you and they're like, yeah, you're the greatest. You're they're telling you things like this. And you're just a young kid like Bo Nickel, who's really never really got all of this publicity and all of this fame and being talked about and so much. You know, because yes, we're all collegiate wrestlers, and you wrestle. We know how it is when you wrestle in college, and you know you have little fans in college, but that's nothing compared to the world when they, especially nowadays, when they have access to you. So, I think yes, of course he's got a level head to him, but I think he should just focus on improving, just stay improving, and you'll get there. You know, stop worrying about what this guy does or this guy doesn't, or what this guy says, or whether I please the fans with the crazy knockout first round. Who gives a shit? Just go out there and improve each and every day.
Yeah, but then again, does the stock go up or down? Rapid fire questions.
I would say about the same.
This is pretty much what he said after he ended up, you know, submitting Cody Brundage. He says, if you're lucky enough to get the call to fight me, just be grateful and sign that contract. I tell you what, Bo. Don't put that pressure on you if you're disappointed in your performance, because quite honestly, I do believe you could be a future champ at 185 pounds, but you are not ready for the top 10. If they put you up against a big bodies like Marvin Vettori, who have one good jiu-jitsu, big dudes, and could also wrestle, even like a guy like Paulo Boaxinha, I mean, he's not quite ready for that top 10, so I think at 185 pounds, he needs to go three rounds. He needs to understand that threshold, because still, him winning and beating these guys super early, if you want to be champion, how is it that you're going to feel when you actually go five rounds against a guy like Sean Strickland, Paulo Boaxinha, Robert Whittaker, Jared Cannonier? That weight class is absolutely stacked. I think he needs to hold his horses. I think he's still maybe 10 fights away from possibly becoming UFC champion.
10 fights? Relax. I don't think so. 10, you know how long it takes to fight? Let's say you fight 2-3 times a year. 10 fights, Henry? That's another 3-4 years. Definitely not 10 fights away. I think he's, if he continues to grow in the pace that he's growing, I think in 2 years he's going to be in that contender series. He's going to be in that contender range for sure.
So 2 years, that could potentially be 6 fights in 2 years.
I would say next 4 fights. He's there.
Really? Kamara, I believe in the kid, but
we know it's moments. We know it's about those moments. He goes out there and like his last fight. Not this last weekend, but the fight previously. He goes out there and gives you two more of those moments. Oh, yeah, he's contender status for sure. Two or three of those moments, one of those ranked opponents, and he disposes of them first round with a huge knockout. Oh, he's definitely fast-tracked to the title for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I just feel like, we'll end it here with Bo Nickel, but Penn State is becoming that breeding ground now for Penn State become that breeding ground.
Penn State is not. When is that? When did Penn State become a breeding ground? They had one guy. So is Nebraska?
Starachi's talking about fighting.
He's
talking about fighting. No, they said they're going to actually fight.
Okay, but let's talk about University of Nebraska Kearney. Is that a breeding ground for MMA? They had a champion right here. They have Rafion Stott, the champion in Bellator. Yep. They got Romero Cotton. Yep. They got Joe Ellenberger. Let's not forget that. You know, wasn't the UFC. Was one of the ones that just kind of took it off. Yep, let's not. So, hey, we can't just go off the deep end and say, oh, yeah, Penn State is a breeding ground for MMA. No, Penn State possess a lot of great wrestlers. And if those wrestlers are brave enough to step into the world of mixed martial arts, there's a chance that they're going to have a lot of success. We can say that. But let's not go off the deep end here and say, oh, they're a breeding ground for MMA. No, they're a breeding ground for wrestlers and world championship caliber wrestlers.
Yeah, but let's, I think either way, that. I think we could agree to disagree. Kamaru Usman.
Oklahoma State.
I think there's...
Oklahoma there State. Is,
of course. But remember, though, we have that heavyweight, too, NCAA champ, too. I forget his damn name. that he's fighting now. I mean, anyways.
Who's fighting?
He's the heavyweight NCAA champ. I forget his damn name, from Penn State. But anyhow, let's move on, dude. Let's move on. I think there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, the sky's the limit for Bo Nickel, too. I mean, we saw the Hamza tweet. Hamza's kind of like, maybe you're not as good as I actually really thought you were. Maybe I will probably entertain that fight with Bo Nickel. You know, that could be a potential fight.
Yeah, I think that's a humongous fight. That's a humongous fight. Of course, I don't feel that Bo Nickel is ready for that type of fight yet, but that's a humongous fight because they both could neutralize one another. Because I think Bo Nickel will get a takedown, and I say Bo Nickel gets that takedown. If he does not get that finish, Hamza starts to touch him. I think it's going to be a very, very intriguing fight. But at the same time, Hamza has not been on his back to understand what that is, to fight off your back, to potentially have to use energy to get up. So when he's put there, how does he react? It's a very intriguing fight. I would like to see the fight, to be honest. Why protect these two right now? Screw it. They want to fight, let them fight.
Well, that'd be the easiest path to a guy like Bo Nickel to eventually mend that, where he could potentially be a fight or two. If he goes against Hamza, let's say he beats Hamza, he's probably a fight away to two fights away from fighting for the belt.
100%.
You know? So I think, you know, we talk about, do you want to, I would, if I'm in Bo Nickel's shoes and I'm in a hurry to maybe fight for the title and I don't want to be continue to keep fighting, I would go Hamza, you know, make it a grappling match, win there, and then fight the, you know, he could potentially fight the winner of whoever wins that championship. Because as we know, Robert Whittaker and Hamza Chimaev, the winner of that fight is going to fight for the undisputed title at 185 pounds.
Yeah, it's a great fight, great storyline. And I think that, like I said, that's a huge fight whenever the UFC decides to make that fight. So, you know, that's on the short list to make.
Yeah. Well, moving on. Let's talk about Jiří Procházka versus Rakic. Am I saying it right, Kamaru?
Rakic. Yes. You know, we're just gonna, these fights were so great, you know, but at the same time, I think we hit the nail on the head when we were kind of predicting these fights. Procházka versus Rakic. Rakic did a great job early on, but Prochazka's unorthodox, you know, approach to the game, mixing it up, coming in and out, I think ultimately wore down Rakic to where he was able to land a shot, get him down, and then just swarm him and get that finish.
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, Rakic was doing such a good job, dude. I'm just like, dude, this dude was being so basic, chewing up Jiří Procházka's leg, but Jiří Procházka's mind was just somewhere else. Like, he literally takes himself into deep waters. Did you see that clip of him freaking standing in the center of the, you know, T-Mobile Arena and just like thinking and shadow boxing and doing his thing, and then there's fans there that are afraid to ask him for a picture? I mean, Jiří Procházka. Yeah, Jiří Procházka. Jiří Procházka is somebody special. You know, I'm honored to have worked with him. He'll text me every once in a while whenever he has a fight coming up, kind of let me know, hey, Henry, what do you think of this war? Or X, Y, and Z, man, because we're able to chop it up. But he's a problem, Kamaru, because one, it's his mind. It's one thing that Rakic, as good as he was doing in that fight, he didn't have that ability to really stay zoned in like Jiří. And I think that's something that makes Jiří very, very dangerous. The fact that Jiří could put the pace on you. He can mix it with level change, with jumping knees, but not just that. And I don't like to give people credit like that. The dude could take punishment. The dude was pretty much fighting on one leg, and he got papped up a couple of times, but he's able to just zone in. And it's almost like he's able to be in that fight. And actually, as the beating gets harder for him, he actually gets better. I mean, what's next for him? I think the only logical fight that's next for a guy like Jiří Procházka is to fight, Sweet Dreams. And I think that's the fight. Or he could potentially, he's in the position after that performance of just waiting and getting the winner of, if Ankulaev and Poatan, if they end up fighting, maybe just wait and get the winner of that.
No, I think he fights Jamahal Hill, and I think the winner fights the winner of Poatan Alex Pereira versus Ankalaev.
Do you think so? You think after that performance, do you think, let's say, if a guy like Jamal Hill's sweet dreams was to able to get a victory, you think they'd give him a title shot, Kamaru?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's not a long line at light heavyweight. So you've got Jan Blachowicz, and then you've got, it's the pool. Jan Blachowicz, you've got Jiří Procházka, and you've got Jamal Hill. So I think, you know, those guys, I don't think Prochazka has fought Jamal Hill yet. So I think the winner of that fight is definitely next in line for the title.
Yeah. How do you fight a guy that's super unorthodox? How do you fight a guy like Jiří Procházka that's just able to really
You just got to be fundamentally sound for three rounds. You just got to be fundamentally sound. Had Rakic had the endurance and fundamental capabilities to just be sound for three rounds, I think they wins that fight.
Yeah, perfectly well said. Moving on to Aljamain Sterling versus Calvin Kattar. I tell you what, Kamaru, Aljamain Sterling is looking really good at 145 pounds. I mean, was it a boring fight? Out of all the fights he had, probably say that was one of the most, but he was able to control, man. He was able to control Calvin Kattar. He was able to make Calvin Kattar uncomfortable, one, with the side kicks, but then two, it was really those takedowns, man. Those takedowns, the fact that Aljamain was able to put the pressure, he was able to use those side kicks, bring in those takedowns, and actually take him down and actually control them, where a slick fighter, boxer like Calvin Kattar wasn't able to get off. And I will say that, I mean, we're looking at it now, but look at that damn power driver. I mean, Triple H would be an ah. He might end up, you know, he might take a fight or two here at the WWE, but he was able to get it. And again, he's a 35-pounder moving up. And not just that is what I like about Aljamain and what they do. What him and Merab do is they talk stuff, but he's also able to call out his next opponent. He's calling out Brian Ortega. He's like, you know what? I was right about me beating Calvin Kattar. I feel like if I go out and I beat a guy like Brian Ortega, that I am one step closer to fighting for the strap at 145 pounds.
It's a good call out because Brian Ortega is a guy that, you know, likes to engage in the grappling. Of course, it's a dangerous fight because he's very, very jiu-jitsu savvy. But, you know, Aljamain looked good. It's exactly what we kind of thought the fight would go. He had the pressure. He had to change levels, get the takedown, and he had the control. And that's exactly what he did. Not the most exciting fight of the night, but he got the victory, and that's what's most important.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential matchup. Let's say if Aljamain Sterling doesn't get Brian Ortega, do you think maybe he goes after another grappler that maybe after Ivolov? What's your take on that?
Ivolov, I'm not sure. I think that's not a very exciting fight. I don't think that's a fight the UFC is going to jump to make. And, of course, Ivloyev is right there on that short list for a potential title shot. So I don't think he's going to entertain a fight with Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, I personally think he's doing it right. I think he has his plan set in place on who is it that he actually wants next. And I think Aljamain's playing it right, man. I think at 145 pounds, he's going to be able to, Kamaru, to be able to take all these dudes down, including potentially the champ. And he's going to be a problem for people. I remember going in there, and if he gets you two to three feet against the cage, and he locks his hands, like, he's going to take you down. I mean, I did the whole damn splits, and he was able to just use that grip, and then boom, pretty much sucked me back. You know, he is gonna be a problem with those takedowns, and I think because he has those plans set in place, and who is it that he wants to fight next, he's being very smart with his career.
Yeah. I agree with you.
But moving on, man. Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison. I tell you what, I'm looking at this fight. I don't know if you want to start off with this fight, Kamaru, but I can give you my two cents on it. You tell me, Naija.
it's, once again, a fight that went kind of how we thought it could go. I think Holly made one mistake of initiating the clinch in. Well, it wasn't really that she initiated the clinch. I think it's just her awareness and her her sense of urgency in breaking from the clinch whenever they were together. And then she was up against the cage and she had her hands on the hip. It's just, she didn't really have that sense of urgency to try to clear that tie and get back to moving on the outside. So, you know, Kayla Harrison, I don't think people realize how strong this chick really is. You know, she's extremely strong. If she gets you down, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough day to try to get back up to your feet. So Kayla just, she did her thing. And I definitely think she's on the short list for that title shot. If she doesn't fight for the title next, I think it's definitely a title eliminator for her.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, who is it that she would fight? I mean, we have, I mean, first of all, I'm looking at this fight, and Holly Holmes just, sometimes I'm just not too sure if Holly Holmes like wants to like fight, man. It's almost like there's a lot of pressure. You can see when she walks out, like how she's like pacing back and forth. But that being said, I mean, she didn't fight the way that I was thinking. More likely she was probably going to use angle, use footwork, pretty much make the fight.
I mean, she tried, Henry. Yeah, she tried. It wasn't like she didn't try. She came out. She was moving. You know, the first round, you know, you got taken down and that was it. You couldn't get back up.
No, but it was that grappling exchange too. She was able to take Kayla down, but what was the strategy of her intertwining and trying to grapple with the two-time Olympic gold medalist?
I don't think it was yeah, but I don't think it was. It was split second, and it was the one time that they got into a clinch position, and rightfully so. As a champion, as a former champion, she's like, I'm not scared of this position, and she was able to get that reversal. She reversed Kayla through. She got on top momentarily. So that showed that she was, you know, that was one of those things that's a confidence booster. Oh, maybe I can grapple with this chick. I shouldn't be scared of these positions. But, you know, it goes to show how strong Kayla Harrison is. Kayla was able to get back on top, and that was all she wrote. And so it wasn't that she was just consistently going into the clinch, into the grappling exchanges. She wasn't. The second time, in the second round, Kayla changed levels from a combination, changed levels, got to the double leg, boom, and right along the cage, was able to get her, take her down and implement her ground and pound until she eventually took the back and got the neck and got the choke. So I wouldn't say that Holly Holmes doesn't want to fight. She does want to fight. And I think it's, you know, right now I think it's a 4-man bracket for that title, well, potentially 5-women bracket for that title. I think you got the champion, who is Raquel Pennington right now, which I think Kayla Harrison should fight. And then you've got Juliana Pena. You've got Holly Holm, which I don't think they've fought yet. I think that's a fight that needs to happen. And then you've got Miesha Tate, who's still hanging in there. And Miesha is definitely a wild card here. So, you know, there's some fun fights to be made in that division right now.
Well, listen, you're forgetting one name. You know what I'm talking about, Kamaru?
Who?
You're talking about the two-division champ, Amanda Nunes. Did you see Amanda's her response? Retired. No, she's Amanda's not. Retired. Can we pull up that tweet, people? Can we pull up the tweet where Kayla gets the victory and she's over there kind of saying, what? You want a piece of what? Pull that up, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, Kayla didn't call out Amanda, did she? No, I don't believe so. And they're in the same gym.
No, she didn't. But Amanda Nunes pretty much giving that call out. And she's already expressed the fact that, hey, Kayla, this is appetizing to me. Say what? I mean, this is good. I mean, this is good. This is good, Kamaru, because it all goes back to the relationship that they have at ATT. They've done sparring. Kayla has said that she's the best in any room that there is. And where I'm very impressed with a girl like Kayla Harrison is that she was able to make 136 pounds and also just to deliver. I mean, it was absolutely amazing what she's able to do. It's pending for her to become the next UFC champion. If they end up giving Kayla Harrison a girl like Raquel Pennington, man, Raquel Pennington, you don't have the grappling. You do have the striking. You do have the heart. But you have this girl who is on her way to become the UFC champ. There's nothing else that I could say. I think that fight with Juliana Pena, if they make that happen, I think it would be super entertaining. I'm just not too sure where the UFC is taking it, but she is represented by the best manager of all time, Ali Abdelaziz. So I think the next time we see her in that octagon is fighting for that damn belt.
All right, Henry, moving on to that first fight on the preliminary card. We had Sadiq Youssef taking on Diego Lopez, and this was an incredible fight. This was my sleeper fight to potentially be fight of the night, and it delivered. Sadiq Youssef went out there, but Diego Lopez continues that streak, continues to show you how well-rounded he is. He is a problem for those guys in that division. But Sadiq, I think he doesn't take the path of least resistance here when he comes to winning fights. And, you know, for that, I am going to try to have a conversation with him just to see where his head's at, because I love the kid. But Diego Lopez, just a savage, went out there and delivered once again a first round knockout. And this guy definitely is in that top 10 right now.
Yeah, no, for sure, dude. 100%. I want to say Sadiq, if his number was number 13, and with the way he was able to do that to him in that fashion, I mean, Diego Lopez is a problem. He's already calling out the first bet. Who's defeated him? He's calling out the Russian once again. I mean, could the UFC eventually give him that rematch? And particularly because that first fight, there's a certain belief and there's a certain confidence that Diego has right now. And if you guys continue to keep sleeping on this dude, he will put you to sleep. And then, I mean, this dude has firepower in his hands. And then Sadiq, you almost too want to wonder is, you know, can you make him fight that B-side? But I will say this, he's also really good on the ground. I mean, we saw his submission games from going to knee bars, arm bars. He does a really good job of transitioning. He's a high-level black belt. And I see the sky's the limit. The UFC is really trying to push a guy like Diego Lopez. So, you know, there's a lot that he could do. I think now he starts to maybe tap into the top 10. I mean, there could be a potential matchup between him and our boy, you know, Dan 50K Ige. I like that fight.
I do. But moving on to the early prelims, who also was a banger. And, you know, these fights could also be headliners in UFC cards. You got Jalen Turner taking on Renato Moicano. This was a good fight. Jalen Turner was doing a good job of keeping the fight long and away, but Renato Moicano was able to get inside, use his wrestling, get to the grappling exchanges, and ultimately eventually get on top and get that TKO victory. You know, just great fight, great all-around fight for Renato Moicano.
Yeah, for sure. And I tell you what, Kamaru, I was wrong on this fight. I was thinking Jalen Turner was going to do a number, a knockout, to say the least, but that wasn't the case. There's a dog in Moicano. There's strategy in Moicano. And for that reason, he was able to get the victory.
Yeah, it's just those adjustments that he was able to make that got him the victory. But moving on, we had Jessica Andrade taking on Marina Rodriguez. Very good fight. I knew this was going to be a closely contested fight by these ladies. And, you know, Jessica Andrade was able to understand the path of least resistance, which is her top position, her grappling exchanges, and, you know, was able to get there and was able to pull off the split decision.
What was your two sets on this fight? Do you think this fight was a split decision victory for Andrade, or did you think Marina Rodriguez more likely got it?
It's when a fight is so closely contested, that close, then you can't leave it in the hands of the judges. The great Burt Watson always used to tell everyone in the back, if you leave it in the hands of the judges, they'll make you cry every time. So when a fight shouldn't be that close. So as a fighter, you should be able to pull away enough to make sure that you've secured that decision. So split decision, you can't be mad either way that the fight goes.
And I think, I feel like a little bit Marina was overreacting to a lot of what is it that Jessica Andrade would actually do. But congratulations to Jessica Andrade for the victory and also for the new girlfriend that nobody's talking about. But moving on, Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. Did I call this with my brother? Come on, Kamaru.
You did. And for this one, I knew it was going to be tough if Bobby Green was going to be on his feet and mobile and moving. It was going to be tougher for Jim Miller. But Jim Miller is one of those guys that's game, that's willing to take punishment. But how much punishment are you capable of taking at this day and age, at this time of your career? So You know, he wasn't able, and it didn't even seem like he wanted to even implement the grappling. You know, that's the thing with a card like this. When you have so much hype about a card like this and people want to see so much fighting and so much blood, to where you forget that I still got to win. And you know, I think Jim Miller just completely forgot about his grappling. He didn't even, he's like, let's just bang it out. Let's just go out there and try to get that 300K bonus. And, you know, ultimately leave himself up to be getting pieced up by a guy like Bobby Green. When Bobby is moving and grooving, he is a problem to deal with. And he showed that.
Yeah, Bobby Green's stand-up is no joke, man. I'm looking at this fight. Obviously, I would love to. I mean, there's so many fun matches for this guy. I mean, I would love to see him maybe fight a guy like Justin Gaethje in the future. You know what I'm saying? Because these guys are...
This dude's willing to throw down
Kamaru. He's willing to throw down. You know what I mean? Yeah. No.
I think this is a fight.
Are you kidding
me? Bobby Green versus Michael Johnson. I think it's time we give those guys a main event. Michael the Menace Johnson versus Bobby Green. I think that is a fight that everyone would love to see. They both are masters with their hands. They both don't have to grapple if they don't want to. They're going to stand. They're going to trade. And I think that is a striker's delight. That's what I'm calling. Ooh, Bobby Green versus Michael the Menace Johnson. Main event, fight night.
I like that.
And now we're going to move on to our first fight of the night. Davison Figueroa taking on Cody Garbrandt.
Can you say that again, Kamaru? Because that accent.
Davison Figueroa.
There you go.
Don't try me. Because I said it fast. Don't try me. Davison Figueroa taking on Cody Garbrandt, which is a good fight for as long as it lasted. I think as the fight just kind of progressed, Cody kind of started to get lured into the grappling and not doing the necessary things to get back to his feet and give himself the best chance to win that fight. And ultimately was caught in a submission hold and had to tap.
Yeah, and I tell you what, man, with a guy like Davison Figueroa, he's dangerous, man. Him going up another... Him not cutting the crazy width that he used to cut from 25 to 35 has also helped him too. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot of options for him. I mean, man, we're in the same weight class. I'm 6. I think he's probably now 7. I don't know how is it that the rankings are actually going to work. I mean, I wouldn't want to fight the dude, but, you know, if worse comes to worse, man, if there's a bout on the line, I'll fight anybody. But for a guy like Davis Figueroa, there's the fight with potentially Cheetos. There's
Jesus.
A fight against... There's a fight against Jan. There's
you fight your brother, wouldn't you? Damn.
You see these, man? I ain't like you guys. I'm cut from a different cloth, Kamaru. I want the gold. I want all the smoke and I want all the gold. That means we got to go toe-to-toe. But that being said, this guy has gotten better and he's getting better and he's taking the right matchups. He fought Rob Font. He fought Cody Garbrandt. Now, who knows, man? Who is it that more likely he's going to... Gonna pair him up because he beat the brakes off of Rob Font and he just submitted a guy like Cody Garbrandt. I mean, overall, Kamaru, I mean, this fight from top to bottom, I mean, we could talk about forever. I mean, what's next for a guy like Cody Garbrandt? I mean, where does that put him in that position? But that being said, UFC 300, Kamaru, was absolutely fire from top to bottom. I mean, we spent a whole hour and damn 30 minutes talking about just pure fights where we didn't even give attention to the rest. But as you know, too, UFC 300 was dynamite. But the announcement of Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler is taking place in June. International Fight Week. How do you see that going, Kamaru Usman?
UFC is so smart. They were good at positioning that fight because it's not a fight you just throw out. International, you just throw out on a different, you know, on a card. International Fight Weekend is a big one. And, you know, you get the whole fan village. You get the whole experience of a fight. And it's a great one. It's an intriguing fight because we've seen a sharp Conor and we've seen a Conor that's hasn't been so sharp. So we're going to see what that time away has done for a guy like that. But, you know, it's something about a guy like Michael Chandler that hits as hard as Michael Chandler hits. If he's able to be as fast twitch and as explosive as he can be, if he goes in there and touches you, you're definitely going to feel it. And we could potentially see another Conor McGregor loss. But If Conor's as sharp as we've seen before, he is a sharp shooter. He's a sharp shooter.
Yeah, at 170 pounds, Kamaru, how do you see this fight? Who does it benefit? Does it benefit Michael Chandler, or does it benefit a guy like Conor McGregor?
I don't think it benefits either one. I really don't. I think when those guys are able to cut that extra weight, when they're able to get to, that's their optimal performance weight, I believe. That's when they're the fastest. That's when they're the sharpest. And I think that's when they're peak physical performances as far as their cardiovascular, as far as everything. And so carrying an extra, 15 pounds. We've seen, I think Conor McGregor has done that. 170 when he fought Nate Diaz, I believe. Correct? Or am I wrong here? Was that 170? Or was that 55?
It was at 170. I think both of them were at 170. I could be wrong, Kamaru, but I want to say they did fight at 70.
Well, if it is at 70, I think it was, I mean, you saw it on the first time because he just, carrying that extra 15 pounds is no joke. You know, you have to give yourself time to really build into that weight and perform with that weight. So I don't know. I don't think it benefits both guys. I think they're both in the same position. Because now once you start to get to round three, four, and five, that's when you really feel that extra 15 pounds.
Yeah. I personally think because Conor has been out for a minute, I think at 170 pounds, it benefits him. But obviously, he's been inactive for so long. A victory over a guy like Michael Chandler could probably guarantee him a title shot either at 155 or maybe even 170, man. This is how the UFC works, man. I think more likely if Conor does get the victory over Michael Chandler, he could just skip the line once again and fight the winner of Dustin and Islam Makhachev. Am I overstretching here? Kamaru?
Yeah, I think that's overstretching a little bit because...
No. He's a cash cow. Money talks, Kamaru. Come on, my brother.
Yeah, but then you put the UFC in a position to where are we just about money now, or are we actually going to stick with the merit of the ranking system, of the positioning to try to get the best fighter to fight the best? Because are we a promotion to where the best fights the best, or are we in a promotion to where, whoever sells the best fights for the title? So I think no. I think
the only right way answer that happens is Kamaru,
if everyone's hurt.
It's both. But remember, the UFC is a marketing company, and obviously we have the privilege to compete. So I think you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, but it's the best fights the best here. That's what we've always been, and that's what we continue to be, which is why the reason why Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway was not the main event is the best fights the best. These are the titles. These hold merit, and this is the gold standard. So I think he's close. If everybody's hurt, of course you give him that title shot. But you've got Armin Sarukian sitting there, and if Conor gets through Michael Chandler, I think the next fight for him to potentially prepare for the title shot is Justin Gaethje.
What I do? Come on! What I knew you were gonna say that? No, I just it's we Justin I Gaethje. Could we could agree to disagree. I feel like one win, if Conor wins, he fights for the belt. I think he'll hang out. I think he'll wait. I think they'll skip because right now Armin's not a big name. Like, he's not. I mean, obviously, he won that fight against Charles Oliveira, but he still doesn't have that Topuria has. A lot of these guys who have recently came in and really made a splash and knocked people out crazy. But right now, anyways, I go back to talking about the entertainment. I feel like typically if a champion like Islam or Dustin Poirier calls for the fight, I mean, that's crazy pay-per-view points. I do feel like a guy like Dana White would actually make that happen. And I really don't think a guy like Conor McGregor would want that smoke against Justin Gaethje. I really don't, bro. I think if he ends up winning, who knows? Maybe they could potentially set him up with a guy like Max Holloway. And then I could see him maybe potentially fighting for the title. But Islam Makhachev, Dustin Poirier was just announced. I mean, obviously, we kind of knew this fight was simmering. The fight was made. How do you see this fight, Kamaru?
It's a good. I mean, it's the next logical answer. Justin Gaethje wasn't able to get through Max Holloway, so that scratches that. Charles Oliveira wasn't able to get through Armin Sarukian, so that scratches that. So, of course, the guy that was been waiting that said, all right, I'll take the fight in June, it was Dustin Poirier. And what a way to get another crack at it. I believe, what is this? Is his third crack at it or fourth? Fourth crack at the title. So hey, what a way to go out for the later part of your career to be able to get another title shot. So it is what it is. I wouldn't necessarily count Dustin out. They're both southpaws, and if Dustin is able to connect, he could potentially hurt you. But I think the grappling of Islam Makhachev has overwhelmed everybody and might be too much for Dustin Poirier.
Yeah. Well, not just that. Yeah, I think stylistically, Islam, he's another version of Khabib with actually better striking, in my opinion. Great top control, just like Khabib. Obviously, he learns from Khabib, and I think that's what makes a guy like Islam very, very dangerous. And the simple fact that Khabib already, his training partner, his coach and training partner already fought a guy like Dustin Poirier. Like, they know where is it that they're actually going to take the fight. So I want us to say this is a do or die for a guy like Dustin Poirier. But Matt, if it is his third and fourth crack at the title, I mean, when do you draw the line? It's like, hey, that's enough title shots. But could he?
Hey, when you continue to perform that way. When you continue to perform that way, why? See, you can't draw the line anywhere. He's still performing. So I think you continue to give it to him
until he eventually beats Islam or Team Khabib.
He beats someone for that belt.
Well, that being said, I mean, everything from UFC 300 to the announcements of Conor McGregor, Islam, and Dustin has been announced. I mean, it was an awesome time. It's an awesome time to be an MMA fan. I'm your co-host, Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
And the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
And we are